I'd like to give an overview of the sour processing wind system that we have at SeaStar and explain to you a little bit about the collection, the way we ordered collection for SAR data in conjunction with the IPOP field program, and then go through about a dozen or so images for Kanapi, Malakas, and Maggie showing the collection we have during that time. So this is basically the outline. I'm going to just go through the diagram of the processing system. Then I'm going to talk about the different types of collections we have. We have both background collections and targeted collections to try and maximize the area that we can collect and minimize the cost. And then I'm going to go through the three typhoons that we've been talking about so far during this meeting. This is the diagram of the wind processing system we have at SeaStars. You can see we get data both from remote receiving stations, but primarily from our own receiving station. We format that data into a backscatter and place it on what we refer to as our backbone system. This is a file system that all our wind processing, wave processing, and various algorithms are able to access when they need the data, and when they're finished processing the data, it goes back on the backbone system. So what we do is we receive the data, we convert it to a backscatter, we retrieve auxiliary files, we create land masks, we remove artifacts from the data, and then the various programs for detecting an eye are given a run, and the eye information is placed back on the backbone. And then once all that is done, we run it through our wind processors, wave processors, and we also have an external wind wave product that Dave Walker was going to talk about yesterday, but unfortunately wasn't able to do that. All the data is placed on the backbone. This diagram shows a Malakas reception where we get the data, we find the eye, we generate wind vectors and wave parameters on that same image. And that goes from the backbone through the processor back on the backbone and provide internet access for other investigators. So we collected a total of 168 SAR images at SeaStars during the ITOP field program. Most of these were background images, background loads, low priority requests, low cost, able to cover a large area, but they're predefined before the season. So we weren't able to modify those depending upon where the particular typhoon was. We also had a number of targeted acquisitions, and I'll talk about those in a minute. In all, we had 19 Cosmos SkyMed passes, 22 MVSAT passes, 101 RadarSat 2 passes, most of those were background mode, and then 26 TerraSat also in background mode. The combination of background and targeted imaging gave us 11 eye hits over the season and 4 near misses. And the majority of those eye hits were for Typhoon Megi. So background missions, TerraSat, RadarSat 2, and MVSAT were the primary background mission satellites. Like I said, low priority collections, but they're all predefined. With that, we had 97 TerraSat requests, which we acquired 26. Primarily, we discovered that we were overtasking the satellite by taking too long of an image. And so that resulted in fewer acquisitions. RadarSat 2, we had 101 requests, 96 were acquired. And MVSAT, 35 requests, and those were acquired at a remote ground station simultaneously with the pass and transferred to us. Targeted acquisitions, we didn't do as many targeted acquisitions, but when we were able to feel confident in the predicted track 2 to 3 days in advance, we were requesting images targeted for a specific storm. That RadarSat 2, we had 7, which we acquired 5. Cosmos SkyMed, we had 36. 37 were required 19. And most of those were with the Cosmos SkyMed. I was trying to put the acquisitions in as close to when the predicted pass was going, when the predicted satellite track was going to be. And a number of those I got in too late. So that's another thing we're learning, when the last possible time you could put it in. So even though we put it in before the time that was required, we ended up having to get them canceled. TerraSat, we didn't have any because they were not available due to calibration. Quickly, Typhoon Kanapi, we had 3 near misses. Malakas, we had one eye hit and one near miss. And Meggie, we had 10 eye hits and a couple of misses. The early ones from October 14th, I was trying to come up with where the track was going to be early on, and my prediction wasn't quite as good. But as you can see, from the 15th to the 21st, we had eye hits. This is a quick overview of Finale. This was an early request that I tried to come up with based on real early track predictions. And we missed the track by a little bit. The storm is over here. This is a background mission from Radarsat 2. I did not reprogram this one because I was not sure if that was going to make the track or not. In these images, you can see the little dots. Those are the last two best tracks from the Joint Typhoon Warning Centers. And that's so those are the last two bracketing the time of the pass. And you can see we just missed that one. And then a little bit later on, another background mission, and we just missed that one as well. This one I could not have adjusted because that was where the track was going to be. This is a close-up of that last one. To give you an overview, most of the close-up images I'm going to show are the same format. The on the right is going to show you a larger map where it is. The center will have the image itself. If I have any aircraft tracks, they will be shown as the red diamonds. And the best track is shown here with circles with the speed and knots over here. The satellite and its characteristics are here, and the time of the aircraft over the flight is here. And then down below, when I have an eye hit, I'll give some characteristics of the eye. So this is our first eye hit for Malakas. As you can see, it's a very nice collect. We got centered on the eye fairly early in its development. Then a couple days later, as it was moving north, we just caught the edge of the storm. As you can see where it is. So you can see the edge of the storm there. This is a close-up of Typhoon Malakas showing aircraft overflights. And you can see where it is up on the right. We were within minutes of the aircraft overflight. You can see that the eye, where the center of the eye is. You can also see that it's very elongated. We fit an ellipse to the eye, sort of a best fit, hand fit by human fit, and we also have some numerical techniques that we're still refining. And you can also see that it's fairly, the major axis is east-west direction. This is a Typhoon Meggie sequence. We have a bunch of images, so I'm going to step through and then go through each image individually. So the first one we have is Radarsat 2 on October 15th. You can barely see the eye of this one there. It's very small and tight. The next day we had a Cosmos SkyNet 3 that just caught the edge of the eye. The following day we've got MVSAT, which got a nice tight eye in there as well. Then a couple hours later we had a Cosmos SkyMed. Again, about 12 hours later, we got a Radarsat 2, and then the Typhoon hit the Philippines. Cosmos SkyMed 3, which was taken 12 minutes after the Radarsat 2. So we have both X-band and C-band of the eye of the storm within 12 minutes as it was approaching the Philippines. After it hit the Philippines, the storm was quite disorganized, but we managed to catch the edge of an eye. I'll show that image later. Cosmos SkyMed 3, another Cosmos SkyMed showing the storm forming and moving to the north. Again, a little bit later, that eye is starting to show some structure. And then 2 days later, we got a Terrace RX as it came back online as the storm is moving north. So here's that first image. You can see the eye in the center. You can see the aircraft over tracks. You can also see that the eye of the storm is not exactly round, but it's fairly circular, and it's oriented a little bit to the northwest. Here we have the MVSAT from October 17th. You can see there's a lot of rain band structure around the eye of the storm. You can also see that there's a bunch of aircraft overflights. Again, this is within about an hour and a half of where we collected this image. The eye of the storm is not quite as round as it was before, but it's still sort of that small ellipse. And the axis, you can see, is it's a little bit more to the east-west. And like I said, you can see there's a secondary essentially circle formulas as well. If we go to the first Cosmos SkyMed that we have with this, you can see that we see concentric structures. There's a high wall or a wall on the outside, which we have is about 45 kilometers. It's very round, and it's oriented pretty much to the, this one is fairly round, so it's kind of hard to come up with, but we have it sort of going to the northeast. The smaller structure inside, we have as oriented, a little bit elongated. The interesting thing to note is on the sequence of images that we have here, the outer ring rotates quite a bit, whereas the inner ring, the inner feature stays quite stationary in its orientation and size. So this is the first pass that we have of it here. We then have a RadarSat 2, quite a long pass, which is interesting to show on the full scale, because you can see both the concentric structures around the eye in there. And you can also see down here to the south, there's a lot of island shadowing of the winds to show up as light and dark bands. You can see gap winds coming through. So this whole structure shows that it's a good couple hundred, 500 kilometers of strong winds to the south. Again, we have similar characteristics in the eye wall. However, the azimuth or the inner eye structure is rotating. Here we have October 17th, a few minutes later, from Cosmos SkyMed Cosmos SkyMed 3. Again, we have similar structure. And then it becomes, I find it's very interesting after the storm has passed over the island. If you look at some of the visible imagery, it's very difficult to tell where the eye is. And in this particular case, you can see where we identify the eye a little bit south of where the best track is. It's very small, but it's really not very organized. And you can see in the next image, we see it moving a little bit to the north of the best track up here. It's a little bit larger. It seems to be that the storm is getting a bit organized. Unfortunately, we only caught the eastern edge of this particular pass. If we go another day later, you can see it's Cosmos SkyMed image of the eye. It's gotten larger. It's much more organized. You can see rain bands circulating, forming around the eye. And again, you can see that the best track is pretty close to where we're seeing this image at this point. So at this point, the optical imagery is starting to show a more distinct eye. Before that, if you looked at the optical imagery, I didn't see that much of a distinct eye. And finally, they come up to our first Taurus RX of the eye. And this one's interesting because this is a much higher resolution satellite. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get any other eye hits with this one. But what you can see is as it's moving north, it's got a quite large and irregular shaped eye. We did fit an ellipse to it, but it's a bit of an art trying to do that with this particular eye. You can also see the larger rain band structures going around it. And if you look at some of the close-up images, you can see some really interesting structural features in the circulation around the eye as it's forming. So in summary, we had a really good collection season. We collected 168 SAR images, of which we had 10 eye hits of Megi and an eye hit of Malacca. We had five passes that were nearly coincident with aircraft observations, so we can work with the aircraft observations to help with our wind predictions, and we can work with the modelers and all three data sets bringing them together. And it takes a lot of effort to try and work with the predictions of the set of the typhoon tracks and with the orbit characteristics to try and merge everything together and get eye hits. We were very fortunate during Megi to get 10 eye hits. And I think with that, I'm going to stop because the following talks are going to be more about the winds and waves that were generated in these images. I really wanted to give everybody an overview of what we collected, how it relates to the other data that we have, and give everybody an overview of what we have. Thank you.
So we have time for a few questions, John?
I guess that will come up during the next talks, but I was wondering, when somebody, when I look at those images, do we see just surface wind? Do we see waves? Do we see rain? Do we see moisture in the air? What are we looking at? Because they have this huge variety, besides, of course, the different resolution as you jump from one to the other, but what are we supposed to look for?
Well, what you actually see is you're seeing backscatter, radar backscatter measured from the ocean surface. And so what you're seeing is all of those features that are modulating the ocean surface. So if you had a completely still, flat ocean, you would get no backscatter from it, so it would be completely black. Typically, on these kinds of storms, you see the eye very clearly as a dark circle because of the low winds, and it's a very flat surface, so it shows that it's being dark. The rain bands around the edge that you see, you have the rain hitting the surface and modulating the surface and increasing the backscatter. And then you have everything in between. So you have waves that are modulating it. So that's why we're able to get winds and waves. The winds and waves modulate the surface and use model functions to get those back. And the later talks will show you how that's done.
Yes. Will you be able to see the convective hot towers, like deep convection area? Because I suspect X-band will attenuate quite a bit.
That's one of the things that we're looking at. That's why we're really excited. We have X-band and C-band
exactly.
Nearly coincident. And
so will you be able to identify these small scale deep convection because with such a high resolution?
I think you should ask that later on in the talk.
Yes. Okay, sorry.
All right. I'm just wondering, did you use the forecast product from the Migration Center that we were putting out every day?
Yes.
Trying to predict weather.
Yeah. And pretty much before there was a storm, it was kind of hard to know what the best prediction was 2 or 3 days out when I was trying to plan the satellites. Ideally, we'd like to be able to plan the missions 3 days out because the satellite operators like that best. Most of them will let us do emergency planning up to about 24 hours beforehand. So the early predictions were not as reliable. If we had much larger images that we could capture, you can get more area. But it was a trade-off between cost and coverage. And so we did use those. Yes, it's hard to predict two different things coming together like that.
Okay, Hans.
Further comment to Jan's question. You have to think of what you see in the SAR image like it's basically the impression of the atmosphere on the ocean surface. So whatever forcing or you have, and this could be rain is a forcing because you change the characteristics, the wind and so on, just think of it. The atmosphere is making takes a stamp and just punches it down in that instant. This is what you see on the surface. So there's, as Mike says, there's a lot of things in there, but clearly they all have to be sort of aligned.
All right, thank you, Mike. Our next talk is